Chapter 18. Dressing Up and the Dissembleologist. I am not sure which of the three women in that room was most outraged by Sidney Grice's last remark, but it was Freddy, of course, who sprang to her friend's defence. "Lucy has told you nothing but the truth." "Quite possibly." "Then how?" She stumbled for words. "Mr. Barf Regal." Mr. G's fingers set off on a ramble around his palm. "The Dissembleologist has it that there are 98 varieties of lies, but I have invented, though never utilised, another 3. Fortunately for Miss Bocking, since she shall be paying excessively for my time, they can be divided broadly into 2 classes. The first is a deception based upon a false statement. Exempli gratia, if I asked your sex and you tell me you are a man, that is a lie by commission. The second is a deception based upon concealing the truth. Exempli gratia, if you were in fact a man in disguise and neglected to grant me that information, that would be a lie by omission.
Sidney Grice waited for his information to be absorbed before concluding,
"Miss Bocking stands, though seated, accused of the latter offence."
"I do not know what you were talking about,"
Freddy blustered, and he tugged his scarred earlobe.
"I am not fascinated by your inability to comprehend unexacting statements,"
my guardian told her.
"What is important is that your delightful companion knows exactly what I am talking about. Do you not?"
His cane lashed out, stopping a quarter of an inch from Lucy's neck.
"Miss so-called Lucy Bocking."
Freddy and I jumped at the swiftness of Mr. G's movement, but Lucy only blinked and said,
"I wanted to test your powers of observation."
"And I your candidness,"
he rejoined.
"Would one of you like to explain?"
I asked tetchily, and Lucy's hand went to her throat.
"Your guardian is referring to my choker."
"You always wear it," I recalled, and crinkled my eyes.
"What did that button come from?"
Sidney Grice lowered his cane.
"You may answer the question."
And Lucy shifted to take the weight off her right side.
"I trust you are not accusing me of anything else, Mr. Grice."
Sidney Grice's eyes crinkled like those of a kindly uncle playing with his niece.
"Oh, Miss Bocking. Pleasant young Miss Bocking. Wealthy yet wounded Miss Lucinda Serafora Bocking. If only you knew how many splendid men and gorgeous women had said that to me just before I handed them over to the Metropolitan Police."
"You go too far."
Freddy slammed her fist on the table, rattling the crockery and splashing the milk onto the cloth. My guardian looked at me as if I had made the accusation, but said,
"For once you are right, Miss Wilde. But it is only by going too far that one can hope to come back to one's destination."
"I think I ripped it off his waistcoat,"
Lucy burst out.
"How do you know it was not his coat or his shirt?"
Mr. G crossed his arms on his chest, like a corpse in a wake.
"Because my thumb caught on his watch chain."
Lucy Bocking sucked her finger.
"Besides, look at the size of it."
"Wonderful."
Mr. G whisked his feet apart, and the knot he had created earlier separated, leaving his laces tied in their customary neat bows.
"Miss Middleton would do well to take note of your observational processes."
I resisted the impulse to empty the teapot over his head and addressed Lucy. "At what stage was this?" Lucy rubbed circles just above her hairline, as if to ease a headache, and said huskily,
"I think, as I was falling, I grabbed hold of what I could to try to save myself, and when it had ended I found it clenched in my fist."
Sidney Grice shot to his feet, and for a moment I thought he was going to take the button by force, but he only said,
"Cross my palm with dentine."
And Lucy obediently withdrew the 4 gold pins, which she had passed through the holes in the button, and dropped it into his hand.
"Please, if it is not too much trouble, might I ask if there was any thread attached?"
my guardian inquired meekly.
"I wonder at your sanity,"
Lucy said, incredulous at the sea change in his manner. and Sidney Grice looked wounded.
It was a civil and pertinent question, he pointed out mildly.
The answer is no,
Lucy told him.
Do you mean no? I may not ask, or no, there was no thread?
The latter.
Not yes, he pressed hopefully.
No.
Oh. He mulled quietly. A short word, but redolent with meaning. I shall retain this carved and perforated disc. Nobody has given you permission,
Freddy objected.
I did not seek permission.
He lurched across the room some 9 limping paces to stand between 2 portraits.
Therefore it cannot be refused.
His head swiveled from one to the other like a tennis umpire.
Mr. and Mrs. Clarence Bocking, your putative progenitors. How,
he spun back,
did they die?
Why are you so determined to upset Lucy? Freddy Wilde raged. Sidney Grice posed like a blackbird listening for a worm.
My thirst to bring this matter to a conclusion is unquenchable.
He took one pace to his right.
And so I must insist upon an answer, and please, for I am ever eager to avoid giving offence, do not ask me to explain why my question is pertinent.
Lucy clenched her needlework.
I am sure you know the answer already, Mr. Grice.
The detective stretched out his arms to either side until they were parallel to the floor.
I have perused the police and newspaper reports and am at a loss to know which to disbelieve the most.
Lucy picked distractedly at the end of a loose red thread.
My parents were murdered.
She gazed at him steadily.
It was an act of revenge by Dester Green, the father of Jacinda, a maid.
Revenge for what? I asked, and Lucy looked about for an escape route.
She was caught stealing from Freddy's home, and when her room was searched, it was found that she had taken a lot of our things, too. Silly trifles, really. A napkin ring, silver, but not a valuable one. A brass candlestick, one of a matching pair. A hairbrush, lots of little things over a few months. My parents would have let Jacinda go without pressing charges. She had been almost a part of the family. And Freddy's parents agreed. They were kind-hearted people. But her father came to the house and made threats and would not leave. And so the police were called. Jacinda was sentenced to 18 months in prison and her father was given 4 months hard labour.
But why did he wait so long to retaliate? I asked. Mr. G was examining Mrs. Bocking's mouth in her portrait, with his pocket magnifying glass.
Dester Green attacked a warder in a failed escape bid and was sentenced to another 7 years.
Lucy passed her needle up through the fabric. Not very bright of him, I commented.
He was from the north of England.
My guardian swiveled to meet my glare guilelessly. Lucy closed her eyes.
The day after he was released, Dester Green got a skinning knife and attacked my parents on their evening constitutional.
I do not remember reading about that, I puzzled, for I had devoured accounts of gruesome crimes since I was a child, and a double killing like that would normally fill many a yard of newspaper. Mr. G peered into Mrs. Bocking's ear.
The news was swept aside by the floundering of the Eurydice.
And it was not difficult to understand why, for that disaster had dominated the minds of the public for months. A ship, manned mainly by young trainees, had sped without incident across the vast Atlantic Ocean, only to founder off the Isle of Wight in a snowstorm, with over 300 lives being lost.
So close to home,
Freddy breathed, and I was not sure if she meant the Eurydice or the Bockings.
And because the investigation was left in the hands of the almost fabulously incompetent Chief Inspector Grundaway.
Sidney Grice turned his glass onto Mr. Bocking's neck as if searching for the fatal wound.
Dester Green was acquitted.
But why? I asked as my godfather limped back towards us. Lucy Bocking let go of her needlework, leaving it crumpled in her lap.
It was a dark night and he ran away.
There was such bitterness in her voice now.
The police traced him through a silver charm shaped like a safety pencil sharpener that he dropped on the scene. It must have been one that Jacinda had stolen. They were so sure they had their man that they did not trouble to search for further clues.
Lucy lowered her head. The defense were able to demonstrate that at least 30 other people had identical charms, Freddy put in.
Including one Adram Droffer, a sacked clerk, who had been heard to threaten Clarence Bocking in St. Lawrence's Church.
Sidney Grice bobbed to pick up the book without breaking his stride. I shuffled my feet, for I had new boots on and they pinched. Do you think Dester Green might have had something to do with the attack upon you?
Unlikely.
Sidney Grice tossed his coat up at the back to avoid crushing it as he regained his seat.
He was axed in the vertebral column in yet another brawl and almost paralyzed.
I believe he tries to communicate by blinking, but nobody in the poorhouse can be troubled to work out what he is saying.
I shivered. Wicked though Dester Green undoubtedly was, the idea of being trapped in such a way chilled my blood.
What did Jacinda steal from your house, Freddy?
A yellow dress I had worn to Lucy's parents' garden party the summer before the fire.
Shall I continue my account of the circumstances of the assault?
Lucy pressed.
I have little doubt that you shall,
the detective assured her.
But kindly do not do so before I have quit the premises.
He held the book by its spine and shook it vigorously, but nothing fell out. I noticed the title, Endymion, in pale lettering. Lucy flushed and wriggled under her blanket.
If you do not want me to tell you anything else, why have you come?
Sidney Grice marked a page with an omnibus ticket, though where he got that from I had no idea, for I never knew him to use that means of transport.
To learn a little of your early lives.
He put the book on his lap.
Starting with yours, Miss Wilde, since you are usually the one who is cruelly ignored.
By you, Freddy pointed out.
To whom else would I be referring?
He said reasonably.
Miss Middleton is almost pathologically kind, and Miss Bocking gives the impression of being overly fond of you.
Overly? They chorused.
That was nicely listened.
Sidney Grice brushed and slapped his sleeve vigorously, as if it were starting to smoulder.
But to return to you, Miss Frieda Josephina Wilde.
He blew on his left knuckles.
Prior to the combustion of your parents' reputedly splendid home and its several occupants, did you have a jubilant childhood filled with love and laughter?
What on earth has that to do with what happened to me?
Lucy swiveled towards him.
It might take me days, weeks, months, or even years to give that clever inquiry the response which it merits.
Mr. G. bared his teeth briefly, though not cheerfully.
For I shall not know it until this case is solved and your money snuggling down in my overstuffed coffers.
He took up the book again, as if about to swear an oath.
Kindly permit your sometime irascible companion to answer my question.
It was happy enough, I suppose.
Freddy snapped, thereby at least partially justifying my guardian's description of her.
According to Mr. Gringham Hartley, assistant clerk to the Registrar General of the General Register Office of England and Wales in the north wing of Somerset House,
the detective said, as he replaced Endymion on the oval mahogany table at his side.
You had three brothers, two of whom perished before you were born, and one before your first birthday.
Lucy flared angrily. I did not employ you to pry into our private affairs.
Coffers, he wrote, then said,
As our ancient foes, the boorish, attenuated, and ineffectual French might say, au contraire.
But only in so far as they concern the attack upon my person, she argued.
Oh dear.
Sidney Grice pinched the bridge of his nose.
Why have so many beautiful women thought they could dictate the course of my investigations?
Lucy rounded on my guardian. I will thank you not to make any more comments about my appearance.
I shall not give you grounds for gratitude, he avowed. And so, Miss Wilde, to all intents and purposes, you were reared as an only child.
Yes, Freddy agreed, and I believe I nearly died from whooping cough when I was 3. I fear that, as a result, my parents spoiled me.
I wondered who had,
my godfather murmured.
You are 5 months and 1 day younger than Miss Bocking.
Yes, and we have lived almost all our lives close to each other, Freddy volunteered.
That was not a question, but thank you for that unsolicited information,
Mr. G said, and she bristled before realizing that he was not being sarcastic.
Let me direct my attention,
he mimed the washing of his hands,
to the current employer of some of my unequalled abilities. You lived, did you not, until shortly after your parents' slaughter, in the unimaginatively and now inappropriately named New House on Abbey Road, adjacent to Steep House, the residence of the menacingly named Wilde family. Mr. Gringham Hartley and Miss Frieda Wilde separately gave me cause to suspect that you had a brother.
Eric.
Lucy pulled her lower lip tightly up.
He was 5 years older than me.
Her upper lip forced her lower down.
Eric died in the fire. Poor Eric.
Freddy took her friend's hand.
He was a lovely, gentle boy.
E-L-T-N-E-G, Mr. G wrote.
Oblige me, for once, by defining lovely.
Sweet-natured.
Freddy poured milk into 3 cups. And handsome? I asked, not sure why that was relevant, but pleased to hear my godfather humph approvingly.
Very, Lucy said without hesitation. You have a photograph of him, Lucy,
Freddy reminded her. And Lucy shifted.
I'm not sure where it is.
Freddy treated us to a rare brief laugh.
Lucy is always losing things.
That is not possible.
The spring knife appeared in my godfather's grasp, but disappeared so quickly that I almost thought I had imagined it.
Even the most careless person, a title for which Miss Middleton could intermittently compete, must spare the time to perform other tasks.
All 3 women groaned. And Eric died in the fire, I recapitulated, shocked at how hard my softly spoken words came out. Freddy puffed out her lips.
He broke in to try to save us, but was trapped in the front cellar before he managed to rescue anyone. What would have induced him to go down there?
Mr. G was trying to balance a gunmetal pen vertically on the tip of his middle finger.
To escape the flames, I suppose, Lucy replied. And once he was down there, the only way out was by the stairs into the hall.
It was a courageous act, I mused. Was he very attached to your parents, Freddy? Freddy avoided her friend's gaze.
They did not really get on, she admitted reluctantly. Eric's main concern would have been Freddy,
Lucy spoke in a monotone.
He had a bit of a soft spot for her.
Sidney Grice caught the pen as it fell.
It was just a schoolboy thing,
Freddy protested bashfully. And I would hate to think that Eric was lost because of it. A tear trickled down Freddy Wilde's cheek, and Lucy patted the hand that enclosed her own.
I like to think that he was.
Lucy dabbed her own eyes.
I like to think that Eric died for love.
Mr. G tried again, the pen teetering on his oscillating finger. I struggled to ignore his antics.
How did you get out, Freddy?
I do not remember anything between going to bed and waking up in pain. Her hand hovered over the biscuits.
Fairbank, the butler, found me unconscious and carried me out.
She pulled back without selecting anything.
How?
Sidney Grice glimpsed my expression and put the pen back into his pocket.
How did Brother Eric break in?
Through a ground floor window, I believe, Lucy said. I knew nothing of what had happened until I was awakened by the sound of the fire brigade arriving. They said the glass had been smashed from the outside.
We shall talk more of this.
My godfather eyed me sulkily for interrupting his game.
Who has possession of the site now?
That is a moot point, Freddy said wryly. My father's affairs were in a terrible state when he died. Apparently he had borrowed money from all sorts of creditors, not all of them reputable, and used our home as security on more than one occasion, and so, until the courts make a ruling on who actually owns the property, the insurance company will not pay out. She plucked at her dress. And so Steep House still stands in ruins. Which company? Mr. G. walked his fingers through the air.
If we could actually talk about why I employed you, Lucy tried.
Of course you can. Sidney Grice jumped to his feet. You and Miss Wilde may talk about it until your tongues cleave to the roofs of your mouths.
Mr. G. slouched back, as if about to take a nap, but all at once tipped forward and onto his feet in one smooth movement.
Come, Miss Middleton, you have given enough offence for one day.
He grasped his startled client's hand.
How chill your dear little fingers have become. Goodbye, Miss Bocking. I hope we meet again.
But I thought...
Freddy pressed the bell in confusion.
There you go again,
my guardian told her,
imagining that I care what you think.
I'm sorry, I apologized to both of them.
They are polite ladies, Sidney Grice told me, and if they cannot forgive you, they will at least pretend to do so.
I was apologizing for...
Best not to remind them,
my guardian advised, and shouldering his satchel, made a stiff bow of the head.
I bid you brace of spinsters farewell.
Mr. G. trotted backwards to the open door and, spinning half a circle in mid-air, jumped with both feet, like a child, over a puddle into the hall. Freddy came racing after us.
You cannot keep treating my friend like this!
She clenched her fists furiously.
Oh, Miss Wilde, I can only apologize.
Sidney Grice bowed his head.
If I have given you grounds to believe that...
Aelin handed me my cloak.
If you give me warning in future, I can have a cab waiting for you, sir.
That is a kind thought,
Sidney Grice remarked, and so I decline it.
Why?
I asked, as we stepped into the square, and three hansoms edged past, all occupied.
The day we accept kindness from our servants, we become beholden to them.
Mr. G. stuck out his cane, but we were beaten to it by an elderly gentleman, in a towering beaver-skin topper.
And that is an egg's eyelash from equality. The moment you bridge the gulf between ourselves and the lower orders, they will swarm across it and storm the citadels of our privileges. Now, Nate, a totter with a good boot on your trotter,
came from across the square, competing with the girls.
Buy my lovely fresh flowers.
She waved a wilted fistful under a frock-coated gentleman's nose, but he batted it away, the head flying off in a faded shower. A gentleman in a green paisley waistcoat and pinstriped grey trousers was stamping his black side-buttoned boot.
Now see here, my good fellow.
An empty hansom came along the opposite side and seemed about to go 10 yards on to a young man in a short sand-coloured coat, jumping up and down and waving frenetically.
Oh, yeah!
He bellowed, and the driver hauled on his reins and wheeled his cab across the traffic to pull up alongside us.
Why march?
My guardian said.
When it comes to social bridge-building, you are a veritable Mr. Isambard Kingdom Brunel.